We'll call the meeting to order. We do not have a quorum, so we won't officially approve the minutes or anything. However, I think what we'll do while we're waiting for members to come in is I know that we had individuals contact us that were not able to be here when we were first presenting the bill. So what I'll do at this time while we're waiting for members to keep coming in is so if there's anybody that would like to testify on behalf of this bill, and look towards is Mr. Hafner here? Yeah, so did I get the name right? Hafner? All right, Mr. Hafner, if you'd like to come up please and state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Hafner. I represent the Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Committee. We are the state's community forestry council.
Welcome.
Thank you. I have appeared before this committee previously to provide supportive testimony for House File 2408, which is Representative Hansen's Emerald Ash Forest Suppression Bill. I'm here today in response to House File 3888, which may help address the Emerald Ash Forest suppression needs of Minnesota communities, but I want to make the case quickly again for House File 2408. There is a precedent of the state supporting communities during Dutch Elm disease, and there is an urgent need currently to support communities and our community forest against Emerald Ash Borer. A statewide infestation of the Emerald Ash Borer is a predictable natural disaster that cannot be managed city by city. You've all seen the pictures of the ash tree death curve that results as Emerald Ash Borer multiplies unchecked. We're going to spend money on this problem no matter what. Unprotected public and private ash trees will die, and the cost of management will be immense. If we wait to sufficiently fund this effort, our management options will be reduced to only tree removal, which will be the most expensive strategy and will yield the fewest benefits. As ash trees begin to die in large quantities, local governments are going to turn to their residents to raise the revenue. So homeowners will at the same time see their property taxes rise as they see their property values decline, surrounded by dead trees. Trees provide significant property value. EAV will eventually overrun every community's ability to respond effectively unless we act now. State support of EAV management and the protection of public trees translates to homeowner tax relief and property value preservation. A centralized management funding strategy for EAV that includes tree protection is going to lower overall costs and increase benefits. The Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Committee believes that the Emerald Ash Borer Suppression Program outlined in House File 2408 is the best option to help communities. And in fact, House File 2408 would accomplish all of the recommendations that are outlined in the Department of Agriculture's 2011 Forest Protection Reserve Appropriation Final Report, which highlighted the successes of the previous $2 million appropriation. Now, in regards to House File 3888, I believe there has been some discussion in this committee regarding the potential EAB suppression funds coming from the Agricultural Emergency Account, which is currently specifically designed for emergency response and preparedness activities for agriculture emergencies affecting producers. We believe that EAB mitigation efforts were more likely to be considered by the commissioner to be emergency activities affecting communities and not producers. So perhaps the committee would consider an amendment that allows for emergency activities that address plant pests, or specifically an amendment that addresses EAB suppression. Emerald Ash Borer is here. The threat will continue to grow, and the sooner we sufficiently fund a broad strategy, the sooner we allow communities the opportunity to effectively respond. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hafner. Any questions? Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your testimony. Just a question on some of the alternatives to tree removal. Does a chemical rate, can you give us a chemical treatment? Can you give us some idea of, does it just prolong the inevitable advance of the disease, or will this actually save trees, or how would that work?
Mr. Hafner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. It's an excellent question. Every treatment provides a length of time in which that tree will be pest-free. And we believe that helping communities through this major wave of dead trees is going to be where we get the most benefit. Now, in addition, those protected trees have a halo effect that allow pests by neighboring or from neighboring trees that feed on the tree to be killed, and we interrupt that life cycle. We interrupt that rapid growth in pest numbers. So it's helping communities get through this death curve that we call it, buying them more time and really allowing for a more orderly transition away from ash trees as a significant component of our community forests. We believe ash trees cannot remain a large component of our community forest, but we cannot see communities finding a way through it in the next 10 years. They need more time.
Thank you. We officially have a quorum, so I'll officially call the meeting to order. Chair Anderson.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. So would the plan be to inject or treat any trees that are still healthy looking?
Mr. Hafner.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. That is the plan. We focus our efforts on the trees providing the most benefit for the communities, the trees that are still in good health, that are in locations that are providing the maximum benefit for their communities. We assume there's always going to be some low-quality trees that will be removed, but again, by preserving the high-quality trees, we allow more time for communities to remove those low-quality trees and have that orderly transition in place.
Vice Chair Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I would like to know is how often do you have to inoculate those trees in order to sustain their protection?
Mr. Happ.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great question. Again, we assume every 3 years, the product in particular that we promote has a label rate of 2 years for guaranteed protection. However, we assume that as the number of treated trees in any given community increases, we increase that kind of spillover effect to the non-treated trees, and we could skip that third year in an effort to maximize the funds and maximize the number of trees protected.
Vice Chair Kim.
Would this keep the tree from being diseased at some point? I mean, how many years would you have to do that in order to protect the tree entirely?
Mr. Hafner.
Thank you. We assume around a 10-year window for this main death curve wave to move through the state. And that's based on, you know, communities to the east of us that have dealt with this. Now, as we implement more mitigation efforts, we're going to change our timeline a little bit, but we're using 10 to 12 years or 4 3-year cycles just to get communities through this wave. After that, all of the untreated trees will die, and we assume there will be some level of the pest crash that occurs because there are no untreated hosts. And as the pest population crashes, we believe we can dial back the frequency of those treatments. And again, we're 10 years down the line. Communities have had more opportunity to get plans in place, to find the funding, to have that orderly transition.
Vice Chair Deal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there is no, there isn't the hope that we can save some of these ash trees, that eventually they're going to be all infested.
Yeah, certainly all untreated ash trees will eventually become infested, but you could maintain treatments as long as you wanted to retain that tree. You know, every public tree ever planted has a removal date at some point in the future, but because there's only a small percentage in any given year that a city has to plan to take out, that's a budget number that they can tolerate. We're trying to reduce that peak death down to a number that they can currently handle.
Vice Chair Gill.
So then what is the ultimate cost of protecting that tree until it's removed?
It depends largely on the size of the tree, but to simplify our analysis down to any one tree, the cost of tree protection is always less than the annual benefit that tree provides. And because our community forests have largely been underfunded or non-funded for so many years, this is really just a slight increase in maintenance costs and really a deferred maintenance cost. But again, the benefits every year provided by these trees exceeds what the costs of protection would be.
Vice Chair Gill.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for the testifiers? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I came in late and I apologize for that. To the benefit, how do you quantify that?
Mr. Hafner.
Yeah, thank you. We use a peer-reviewed tool created in combination with the U.S. Forest Service to measure the size of the tree and make some, you know, fairly reasonable assumptions about the benefits that these canopies provide. The benefits are largely calculated by the shade they provide in reducing heating and cooling costs. Also, stormwater mitigation is a large benefit because trees convert rainwater to groundwater and keep it out of our storm sewer systems. So we put more water in the ground. In addition, the trees growing on properties provide, you know, a certain amount of benefit to each property on which they grow. So all of those benefits are combined into kind of one calculation based on size.
Santavian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But to Representative Keel's point in mind, okay, so you know how you quantify it, then what is the quantifiable number that's there versus the cost to treat it?
Sure.
Ongoing?
Our calculation, if we look at a standard or fairly average size ash tree in our 7-county metro area, it's about an 18-inch in diameter. Now, that's measured at 4.5 feet above the ground. That 18-inch tree provides about $170 every year in those combined benefits. We can protect it for about $250 or $2 an inch per year. So 18 times 2 is only $36 annually to yield that $170 benefit.
President Fabian? No? Any other questions for the testifier? Seeing none, I thank you, Chair Anderson.
Thanks. Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. You know, in the policy committee, we heard amendments to ban certain chemicals on golf courses and such, and we hear other initiatives as well as far as corn. But in this case, we're looking at a chemical to save a population of trees. Talk about the chemical itself. What is it and what toxicity, that type of thing? What about the chemical itself?
Mr. Hafner.
Sure. The chemical we are promoting is called emamectin benzoate. Unfortunately, I'm not a chemical expert. The process by which we treat these trees is to inject the tree itself with the product so that it's translocated up throughout the canopy. It's a way to drastically minimize the impacts of any non-target organisms. I fear saying more because, again, I'm not an expert in the production of the product itself, and I would hate to mislead anyone.
Chair Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair, but just a final comment that chemicals do good things as well. In this case, we're asking them to do a job of protecting trees for a while, and just that chemicals have a place used correctly, and they can do some good things. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no additional questions at this time. So, thank you, Chair, for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next on the list, I believe we have somebody from the City of St. Paul. Is that correct? Please state your name for the record and who you represent and begin, please.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Cy Cosell, and I'm the Natural Resources Manager for the City of St. Paul. And while this is a regional and statewide issue of significant importance, I just wanted to give you an update a little bit about what's going on in St. Paul. First, I want to thank you for hearing our bill earlier this session, and we realize you were given a tough target to work with. We hope we can continue to work with you and address it. But what you should know is that in the City of St. Paul right now, right outside these walls, St. Paul's been dealing with EAB since 2009, and like other cities, Minneapolis as well. Thank you again for the State of Minnesota. They gave us $750,000 initially from the Forest Protection Reserve in 2010 to start our management program. But you should know that since then, the citizens of St. Paul have stepped up to the plate and are paying over $1 million out of their pockets every year to battle EAB. We believe our forestry division's been very aggressive in its management, and to this point, we believe it's helped to delay the explosion of EAB. However, the evidence suggests that we are on the cusp of a steep rise in the EAB mortality curve. Already this year, in 3 months, we have a 400% increase in confirmed EAB infested trees over a similar 3-month survey period from last year, about 800 trees that we found in just 3 months. Also based on our findings, over 80% of our city is now highly suspected of EAB infestation. What this indicates is that EAB is not only spreading in the area, the density of the population is rising, and this is a significant development for the future. Without your assistance, the state of St. Paul is faced with losing tens of thousands of ash trees in a short period of time. These trees represent a significant percentage of the city's beneficial canopy coverage that helps all of us in a multitude of ways. Because the work in front of us now exceeds our forestry division's capacity, we've had to discontinue inspections on private property. Previously, we have been dealing with going out and looking at private property and working with owners on those to get rid of those EAB-infested trees. However, citizens are now on their own to deal with EAB without our help. And this is only going to cause the spread of EAB to quicken and become worse. Not only is this a crisis for managing public ash trees, obviously there are tens of thousands of ash trees on private property in the city of St. Paul. Citizens, many already financially strapped, are going to need the help, hopefully, of the state to come forward. And again, this is just St. Paul's experience. However, we support this issue on a regional and state basis because the experience of St. Paul is only going to spread. It's already in Minneapolis. It's in many of our suburbs. It's in southeast Minnesota and elsewhere. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cosell. And we do have a question. Representative Hansen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wonder if you're aware that I got some information anecdotally that there was a confirmation in West St. Paul in the last week or so of EAB. Do you know if that's correct or not?
Mr. Cosell.
I am not. I usually stay abreast of all the notifications. I know it's all around St. Paul. It's on the west side, which I grew up on, and just right next to West St. Paul. I did not hear about it. It's actually in West St. Paul, but it's in Dakota County in a number of places.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, they could creep across Annapolis. The trees are right there. So I think, Mr. Chair, and we've heard testimony today, and it's important, again, to reiterate that when the pest is coming into the state, it's in the jurisdiction of Ag, not the DNR. So this is in our bailiwick here, and I think we're going to have a long conversation over the years about this and what we could do and should have done. So I appreciate the testimony, and this is a big issue for our cities and our state, whether they're in a city or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Any other questions for Mr. Cosell? Seeing none, I thank you for your testimony, and I know that the two testifiers couldn't be here when we heard House File 2408, so they asked to be able to testify today, so I thank you for being able to come today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we're going to move into Representative Miller. First of all, could we get you to, have you looked at the minutes? Would you like to approve the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we approve the minutes.
For April 12th. Any discussion on the minutes for April 12th? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion failed. Representative Miller, let's move to special recognition. Do you have, are you ready?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm ready. You want me to sit here? I'm going to go over to the testifier. We're going to want a picture of him, so I'm going to go over there.
All right. Okay. All right.
I'm going to sit so I can go by the microphone, and then I'll stand next to Jerry. Mr. Chair and members, I'm honored to have my opportunity to give a House resolution in honor of someone that has done a great deal for agriculture. But before I read that resolution, I want to make one comment. We talk a lot in this committee about the family farm. We talk about how the family farm is disappearing and how we can maintain that family farm. Jerry and his wife Connie, who's here today, their daughter and their son-in-law are now farming. They have two grandchildren that are farming. When you think of family farm, you think of the Mulders and the Dohertys. They're very special to my heart because when I moved here 14, 15 years ago, they welcomed my family with open arms. I consider them great people, and this resolution really does not go far enough to say to the level at which they have loved family farming, they have proven that it works, and they've handed it off to the next two generations. And that's really what I want to most thank Jerry for at this time. But I'm going to read the resolution at this time as well, if I may go ahead.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A House resolution honoring Gerald Mulder on his service to Minnesota agriculture. Whereas Gerald Mulder has been farming in Renville County for 43 years and has been a humble servant and vocal advocate for farming his whole life, encouraging his fellow farmers to stand up and speak out on important agriculture issues. And whereas Gerald has been a Renville County 4-H board member for 20 years and previously served as a Renville County Farm Bureau board member. And whereas he has served for 7 years on the Minnesota Corn Growers Board. And whereas through his work with the Minnesota Corn Growers Association, which he served as secretary, he stood up for corn farmers in St. Paul and Washington, working to grow ethanol fuel production and supporting farmer-funded research. And whereas through his involvement with Minnesota agriculture in the classroom, he is passionate about connecting farmers with the non-farming public and promotes understanding and awareness of the importance of agriculture. And whereas his daughter and son-in-law and two grandsons are also farmers now, therefore be it resolved by the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration of the House of Representatives of the State of Minnesota that it congratulates Gerald Mulder on his outstanding contributions to Minnesota agriculture, dated April 13th, 2016, by Kurt Dowd, Speaker, Minnesota House of Representatives, Joyce Pepin, Chair, Rules and Legislative Administration, and you, Mr. Chair, Rod Hamilton, State Representative.
Members, let's congratulate Mr. Mulder.
Thank you.
I would just like to say thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I don't think I'm that good. I have served on a lot of these committees, done a lot for agriculture through the Corn Bureau.
Well, Jerry, two things. One, a technical thing. If you could state your name for the record, if you would, please. Right?
Gerald Mulder.
All right. Thank you, sir. And also, thank you so much for everything that you've done for agriculture. It's greatly appreciated. And thank you, Connie, as well. Thank you. All right, members, what we'll do now is we'll move into House File 3888. I will move House File 3888 to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Pardon me? Yeah, we're not there yet. Well, it'll be as amended. Oh, yeah, we adopted DE1 last time, so as amended. We do have one amendment today, so it's a technical amendment. I'm going to ask Mr. Sullivan, you want to just walk us through the A2 amendment?
And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the A2 is an amendment that Mr. Sabry and I put together, a technical amendment for the committee's consideration. These changes are purely technical in nature on lines 3 and 4. There actually aren't more than one article in this amendment, so we're changing the word article to act. There's a typo on the total appropriation currently in the DE, so that's fixed on line 6. Lines 7 through 19 look like they might be substantive changes, but they're not. It's just a reordering of the language per the recommendation of House Fiscal. And on lines 20 and 21, that's just a clarification that the transfer would take place in fiscal year 2016 and be one time only. That is a recommendation from Minnesota Management and Budget.
Members, any question on the A2 amendment? Any questions? Seeing none, I'll move the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right, to the bill as amended, would we prefer? How about, I'm going to ask, is there any testimony first for or against the bill as amended? And so I will look to anybody, any testimony, Ms. Place, move to the department. I want to open it up. We want to be fair in the process, too. So if anybody would like to testify for or against this bill,
in the audience, please come forward. Ms. Place, state your name for the record and begin.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Whitney Place. I'm the Director of Government Affairs at the Department of Agriculture. The governor had two major fiscal initiatives for the department in his supplemental budget request, the first of which was a $2.218 million capital request to replace lab equipment in the department's laboratory. And the second was a request to give the department additional capability to respond to and prepare for agricultural emergencies, such as the HPAI outbreak we experienced last year. There were a number of budget-neutral initiatives in the governor's request that are also a part of this bill. The department appreciates that all of the requested initiatives from the governor's supplemental budget are included in this bill, and we look forward to working with the author and committee as it moves forward.
Thank you, Ms. Place. Any questions for the testifiers, member? Any questions? Seeing none, I thank you for your testimony. Going to open it up as well. Anybody else would like to testify for or against this bill? Anybody else? Seeing no one moving forward, now let's open it up to questions or comments from members. Representative Poppy. Representative Poppy, you want to?
Sure. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we all agree that farm safety and researching disease and potentially preventing the development and spread of new diseases is worthy of our funding. I don't think we have a dispute there. I think the priorities that you set for these dollars is appropriate, and I think we support that. So I think while there isn't any dispute over the what and why of spending the dollars, I think there's maybe a bit of a dispute over the how this budget is spending what would have been spent dollars in this budget. And I think that there is a concern just about the unknown future. And I think that that's, you know, maybe where I can understand how different priorities, new priorities, can supersede previous priorities. I think that that happens on an annual basis. It probably happens more quickly than most other things. But as that happens, we do perhaps leave a bit of some concern and some fear yet. Knock on wood, we don't have a crisis in front of us at this point, but I think we have had a crisis in the past, and I think just continuing to, I think we just need to raise that as a caution again for us. You know, we are in the middle of April last year. As you said, Mr. Chair, we were facing a number of farmers had already been impacted by the avian flu, and as you look at the course of the disease across the United States, you know, some hadn't yet been impacted by this time. And so I think we're, you know, if we were in October, we'd be at a little bit different point, but we're in April. And so just being concerned about what's happening, and, you know, hopefully, again, we have this really horrible experience behind us, but I think that there is somewhat of a fear and a concern that something could happen. And I think, so I raise the caution just for a couple of reasons. One is our ability to effectively and with expediency be able to respond to a crisis. I hope that we have not put that at risk in the bill as it comes before us. But also, I think there has sometimes been a tendency to finger point and politicize things, and when we do face an emergency. I don't want that to happen in the future. I know that we try to avoid that in this committee. Yeah, this committee has been known for its bipartisan, nonpartisan approach over the course of many years, and I think we want to continue to be able to have that. So sometimes when something gets emotionally charged up, there's a tendency, I think, just human nature, to then have a different kind of response, and that can lead to some things being said or processes or positions being taken that maybe we would regret if we were in calmer times. So I'm only raising the concern, and as I said, I don't think there's a dispute about we do support farm safety, and we do support trying to fund and resolve any emerging diseases and other concerns that we have. But because there is a surplus this year, it would have been better, I think, if we could have used some of that surplus in order to be able to take care of the concern and the fear, as well as these new initiatives that have come forward. So I appreciate that we have a bill that I think you'll see a lot of support for. I just wanted to be able to raise that concern. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Poppy. Any other? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it won't have unanimous support. I think we are in a crisis. We just had two testifiers up here talking about the threat to the public infrastructure and the private infrastructure relating to our trees, which, again, are in the jurisdiction of this committee. So we did respond last year by finding money and appropriating money. And that money is being taken today for different priorities. Would we have the same response, or should we have the same response as we had with Dutch Elm 30 years ago, or as we had a year ago, to a different pest, a pest that was a disease rather than a little green bug? So I can't support the bill, I think, for a couple of reasons. One is it is, as is often done, taking money from other pots of money. When it's less than a year ago, we reacted for the avian influenza. And it does not have the same level of response to threats to the public infrastructure from Emerald Ash Borer. Emerald Ash Borer and avian influenza will not be the last of the diseases and pests that we will face. And so we've got to get a handle on this. I think that we did come together last year, but we're not coming together now. And that's a missed opportunity when there's a surplus, as Representative Poppy mentioned. There is money there on a one-time basis that could be used, and I would hope that it had been, but it is not.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Anybody else? Representative Johnson first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to kind of echo Representative Poppy's comments, but identify a couple of things that were the classic missed opportunities. To be honest, I'm disappointed that there's no, you know, there's a recognition of farm safety with the rollover, but I really do believe that maybe going forward we can talk about it, a small amount of money going to finance that initiative that's in the policy bill. I just think that there's, you know, we're asking a lot of the department. We need to do that sort of thing well, and I'm a little concerned about that. But on a larger case, you know, I think we've had really good hearings in this committee and in the policy committee, and we've heard, I'm thinking about the urban agriculture. We've really learned a lot about that over a couple of years, and really exciting things happening, particularly in the metropolitan area. I know you're interested in that. I thought the hearing on a couple of days ago was tremendous on the food access, and the ideas that we saw represented, the two women that testified, really get at some excellent ideas about how to deal with food access. The decline in grocery stores, and whether it be in the lack of access in the city or in a lot of rural Minnesota, I think we're onto a problem, but we're not addressing that in this bill. And then the third one I could mention is, again, the emerald ash borer. You know, there's a lot of ash trees in my hometown, and we're vulnerable, and that, you know, we keep putting that off. It adds at risk. So it's those lost opportunities in a larger overall approach in the House to, you know, zero targets all over the place that are caught here, and it's not the way I think we would go after it, but I recognize the political realities of that. I want to say one other thing, though, and I want to thank you for something that I think is really important. I really appreciate that we heard this DE amendment 2 days ago and that we're voting on it today. We don't do that in every committee. And, you know, I just think for, as a relatively new member of the House, and certainly I think for the public, I think there's really value, and maybe we could at some point look at rules going down the road where when we're doing the finance bills, that they have that time to rest a little bit. And I think it really adds to the ability to for better quality legislation. When we hear a bill on the finance bill on the very day that we also vote on that, it doesn't give myself time to reflect on it. I benefit from that reflection. And something tells me that the public does too. And so I think that's a better process. And it's another example, like Representative Poppe acknowledged, this committee works in a bipartisan way. But this was also an important structural choice you made, or the leadership made, to hear the bill 2 days ago and then vote on it today. And that's the better way, to, in my mind, to go about the legislative business.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. First, to your point about giving everybody time, you know, that was the decision that we wanted to make, so we would have time to weigh in on it, because I know people have topics that are important to them as well, and that way you have ample amount of time to draft up amendments too. I understand and I echo what you say around that. I would like to address the urban ag and the good food access, and if I could ask Mr. Sullivan, are you because myself and Representative Clark, we're going to be meeting with the governor, the lieutenant governor, on Friday, and we have some ideas as far as potential funding for those two. And so I met with Mr. Sullivan yesterday, and so if Mr. Sullivan, if you could just review or share with us some of the information that we covered yesterday.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, we discussed conference committee and the joint rule that governs what can and can't come back in a conference committee report. And that's joint rule 2.06. It requires anything that's in a conference committee report to be germane to the House or Senate bill. And it states further that a provision is not germane if it relates to a substantially different subject or is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose from that of the bill from either body. So that's fairly broad and would be up to the interpretation of the conferees. And we discussed that the DE and what will become the new engrossment contains the rider for the Agri program, which includes terms such as developing urban agriculture, development of an expansion of food hubs and other alternative community-based food distribution systems. So there, as far as a determination on germaneness, just kind of a quick reading of the bill, there is language in here that does relate to, in my opinion, to the urban agriculture language that the committee heard and the good food access language.
So, thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the point about meeting with the governor, and I'm glad the governor and the lieutenant governor are anxious to meet with you, and that's important. But as a member of the House, I sit here and think maybe the more important meeting is with the Speaker of the House, because, you know, it's very easy to lean on the governor, and we've got a governor who's got broad shoulders, and he shows it time and time again, and we're asking him to carry that weight again. I'm frustrated on a number of fronts, to be honest. I won't get into all those, but I think some of that responsibility lies right here in the House and the House leadership. And I know you meet with them, but it rankles me a little bit that we go to the governor when really this is the House of Representatives. We should be going to the leadership in the House.
And Representative Johnson, just for the record, I've had that conversation as well. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to compliment you and quite frankly, all the members of the committee for putting together a good bill. And working within the targets that we have, I think that, based on the testimony that we've had, there's a couple of issues that obviously that some people are passionate about, but I think overall, in this biennium, you, with your leadership, have returned agriculture and the Ag Finance Committee to the proper stature that it should be. I don't want to necessarily retrace what happened in 13 and 14. I think we're all fairly familiar with that. But I just want to compliment you and the committee members and the people who've testified on behalf of a lot of reasonable bills. You know, I wish that there was an unlimited supply of money to go around, but there's not. But I think that when you talk to people in the ag community, they're extremely happy overall with the direction that you have led this committee and where we're going. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And just to echo what Representative Hansen talked about, the Emerald Ash Borer, most of the conversation has been around what's happening in municipalities and stuff like that. But I need the committee to be aware that we have huge acreage of black ash in my district. There might be some in Representative Fabian's district, but in St. Louis County and Aiken County and others. And if we don't get a handle on what's going on with the emerald ash borer, we're going to be talking about stagnant swamps rather than swamps that are doing our water filtration that are so critical to our clean water, too. So we need to get a handle on what's going on with this problem, because if it moves in the north, it's going to be a bigger issue. So I just want to make comments, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Backlund. Representative Clark.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to clarify the points you just made about urban agriculture and what we're attempting to do, and just I came away from our discussion with the understanding that there would be some language that would do, I think you called it not a set aside, but a place. You know, there'd be some placeholding language. And I think what I heard from Mr. Colby is, Sullivan, is that there's already language there that there doesn't need to be more language. Is that what you're saying? Maybe it's a question to Mr. Sullivan first, and then I guess you and I, in the conversation, I thought there was going to be some sort of effort to... What did you call it? You had a particular word for it.
Representative Clark, I had said a placeholder.
Placeholder.
So then after that, I asked Mr. Sullivan to come down so we could take a look at the bill that was passed last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Sullivan, would you like to respond, please?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, if the purpose of a placeholder might be to create sort of a nexus about urban agriculture and good foods to the bill that's before the committee right now. And so my thought on that was, with the agri rider from last session included in this year's bill, that nexus with the terminology is already there, so the placeholder language may not be necessary.
Could you show me where that language is?
Representative Clark.
It's on the DE1. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, that's the DE1, page 17. And the words developing urban agriculture are on 17.20 and 17.21.
Okay, so...
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, in both of your opinions and the discussion we had about being able to look at that as something that if the funding comes in from, say, the Senate or some other way, that this would be a placeholder-type language that would allow that to...
And that was a question. I'll respond first. Yes, I do believe so. And Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, yes, I agree. I think a strong argument could be made.
And,
okay, and then
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I am looking forward to our meeting. I know that after we have that meeting, we will have to meet with the Speaker. So I know that we would be doing that because, of course, it requires that kind of support in the House. I just want to say I really hope this does... go forward. I think I've appreciated so much your commitment to this area.
Well,
and I think, Minnesota does have an opportunity. Right now it's a missed opportunity in this bill, but an opportunity to really provide leadership here. As you know, the language you put in last year is unprecedented in other states in terms of having urban agriculture as part of the mission and the work of the State Department of Agriculture. So it's disappointing not to have the funding here, and I know your target took that away, but I just hope that we can come back with some funding that will show up somewhere in the along the line to really focus on this. Because it's not just food, which is certainly one of the basic needs that we as people have. It's also economic development and entrepreneurial opportunities that we heard, I think, in some of the testimony for people around the state. And one of the things that happened with this urban agriculture bill this year is that it became a statewide bill. It's not just urban in the metro area. It's urban as far as small towns, if people remember, way down to 10,000 people. So we're talking about little towns all over Minnesota, medium-sized towns and others, and also some of the folks who are in what's called peri-urban areas. So we had modified the bill to say urban and peri-urban agriculture, and I probably should always be saying that so that we keep that in mind, because it does allow the suburbs and the other areas to participate too. So I just wanted to both express disappointment that we don't have the funding in here, and then secondly to say I appreciate that we're trying to look for other ways to bring it in to this bill and this whole arena in the future, in this session. So, I propose that.
Well, thank you, Representative Clark. And I would like to thank you and Representative Poppy. Representative Poppy, or Chair Poppy, she had the initial hearing on urban agriculture. And I'll tell you, when that hearing first took place, I didn't understand it. And I have learned a great deal. And I know myself and Chair Anderson, we went out in the district that you serve, Representative Clark, and learned a great deal. And like I've said before in committee, it's more than just growing a carrot. I mean, we're growing communities, we're growing the economy, we're growing children, for goodness sakes, right? And there's so much more. And I've said, you know what, in agriculture, we're not going to tear down one segment to try to promote another. We want it all. And we're all in this together. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about urban agriculture, too. And Representative Johnson brought up, you know, the fact that we need to work with leadership in the House. And we have met with leadership in the House, and they were receptive. I'll say that. I went in, and I met with the majority leader and the speaker, and we talked about the urban ag and that piece. And the angle that I'm taking, too, because of the leadership with Chair Poppy, and when I had said, and looked around the room, I said, I've never seen so much color in this room. It continues to grow, and it's beautiful, right? And we talked about, there's a lot of talk this year about racial disparities and money that will be invested and not quite sure where or how. And when I talked with our leadership and I said, here is a perfect example of how that money could be invested and the benefits would be great. Not only to, for many reasons that we already mentioned. So we are still working on this. And our conversation that we had yesterday is that because these conversations are being had, because in the Senate, in the governor's office, and here in the House, we did wanted to make sure that we had language in the bill so that we can continue with this endeavor. And so I feel confident that the language is there. Mr. Sullivan, I think his interpretation is the same as mine, and we're going to continue working on that and bring this thing to fruition. Representative Anderson, Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that I enjoy serving on these committees and with you, Mr. Chair, and you are dealt a difficult target number. There's no doubt about it, but I think one way we could look at it is that the money that was available sitting in these other funds, we're now able to put those dollars to use again and yet have access to a larger fund, the disaster fund, if we certainly hope and pray an outbreak doesn't occur again. But we're going to repurpose these dollars, put them to work now, when hopefully the bill is passed and signed. But yet our livestock industry and such will be able to have protection with the disaster fund that the state of Minnesota has established. So I want to thank you for the work you've done, despite the low target number, to get some funds to work with and put in a couple of programs, the one that I'm passionate about, but also other work for livestock and disease prevention, those types of things, to help the university, Board of Animal Health, to work further and help us down that path of trying to eradicate or at least to identify these outbreaks in a more timely fashion and eradicate them quicker. I think we all on these committees have some of the same general ideas and goals and enjoy the bipartisanship working together with each other, and just want to say thanks to all of you, and we have a good bill here. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Representative Clark, did you have a follow-up? Representative Johnson? Did we have a? I always look at you, and it's Clark Johnson. I'm sorry. That happens a lot.
You know, I've been joking, and maybe I need to make some sort of initiative. I think I get called Representative Clark enough that I also get called Representative Johnson. I wonder if there's a way to arrange two votes for out of that.
Or I think we could. Well, you know what? You're such a nice guy. We call you by your first name because you're such a nice guy. So I hope you're not offended.
I'm not at all.
Mr. Chair, to that point,
Representative Fabian.
I would entertain a motion to allow him to vote twice on the final passage of the bill if there's not a roll call.
And as long as he votes the right way. Yeah. All right. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And following up on Representative Clark's comments,
And a lot of times we use jargon here in the exchange with the staff on providing a placeholder. Maybe the folks watching at home, I think it's important to maybe use plain language that this budget actually has a $1.9 million cut. There's actually a cut to the budget. And so what we're talking about with Urban Ag and talking to people and talking to the governor and talking to the speaker is trying to resolve that there's not additional money for other priorities. And folks at home watching might not be clear about that. So what we're talking about with trying to provide a hook in the bill is to provide the process that's happened last year at the end of session, which is that something comes back from conference. So we're really counting on the DFL Senate to save us from ourselves by providing more money for these projects rather than taking money from different projects or having a budget target that provided for these projects. So we're talking about what we're going to talk to these people and have the conversation. But when it goes into conference committee and the bill comes out, there's no opportunity for amendment. And as we learned with many issues last year, people didn't even know what the consequences were of some of that. So we could have a bill in front of us that had a higher target, that funded things, and it would be clear enough that people's representatives, who we are, would have the vote on that. What we're doing here is providing a procedural process where we're not going to vote on it until the deal's done. And I can't think of how many times in the last year since the special session ended where people referenced deals that who knew who was involved in the deal. When we vote here today, people can see how we vote. We could have moved amendments, and we chose not to have amendments to try to fix this. As a legislature, we have to do a better job not defaulting to a conference committee. We move too much to the end to have the leaders make the decision rather than have public process where we can make the decision. And I would hope, Mr. Chair, that any of these ideas actually get vetted before the final bill appears, whenever it appears, if it appears at 3 in the morning. So we don't have to have a long discussion on the floor about what does this mean. We've been down that road already. I don't think people need something like
that. Well, Representative Hansen, I'm going to open this up. You know, the time is, it's the middle of the day. It's 11 o'clock. You had the opportunity to offer up amendments, and you chose not to. You just said that. You know, if you want to turn this partisan, I'm not going to do it here in this committee, but I'm ready for the House floor, the debate on the House floor. And some of the things, last year was the budget year, and we increased the budget from right around $80 million up to $117 million for the ag budget. We took the Department of Ag, and we have wonderful people over there. They were struggling to meet their statutory requirements as it pertained to food safety. And we passed a bill, bipartisan bill, that allowed the department to increase FTEs by almost 40 people so that they can meet and protect the consumers of this great state. We invested in research. We also invested in farm business management that was on life support with the individuals that controlled the House prior to us. We have done a number of things in this bill in the budget year, which was last year. And we want to do more. I agree we want to do more. And that's why we're doing some of the things that we're doing currently, because we also understand the way this place works and through negotiations, etc. But I have a whole list of great things that we collectively have done in this committee for agriculture, collectively. And if we want to have this discussion, I'm going to refrain here at this meeting today, but I am eager to have this discussion on the House floor. Eager to have it on the House floor. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, you know that we can't, if your target is your target, we can't spend any more than that target. And I don't think we want to engage in taking money from other pots of money. That's what the bill does. It takes money from less than a year ago appropriated for a crisis. We don't know if there's going to be another crisis. This is a huge roll of the dice. So I think we should reflect back to what Representative Poppy said. We have this conversation about not what happened last year or what happened last 2 years, but what's in front of us right now. Mm-hmm. And what's in front of us right now is appropriating money that was appropriated for other purposes, a budget target that is a cut that doesn't allow us, and I could make a motion, but it's out of order. It should go above your budget target. We can't spend money we don't have. You don't have the target.
Well, Representative Hansen, like you said, you can have amendments to transfer money to things that are important to you.
That's my point. I don't want to transfer I don't want to take money out of other pots that are appropriate.
So you support the language in the bill?
No, I don't support taking money from other purposes. You are in charge. You guys are in charge. You as a chair have the opportunity to talk to your leadership.
That's right.
Ask for a bigger target. You didn't get it. You got a cut. And that's what we have to deal with. And for my constituents, I'm voting to say that's not right to take from the other pots of money. I may be the only one. But dissent is not a crime.
Any other questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question. I just have a comment. I don't know where this fits in this discussion, but I want to thank you for the bill, actually. I'm a business guy. I'm actually comfortable with this model. Looking at the bottom number, somebody might say that this is a cut. Okay, I get that. But in the end, just by looking at a number, it does not give you results. If we spent more money last year, and this year this number looks like a cut, well, for everything that we've heard for testimony this year, there's been a lot of good that's been done by this committee. And just because this number is less than a higher target, that doesn't mean that we're going to do less. We could actually do more with less, and that's what I'm assuming that we are actually doing based on everything that's come through this committee, that this number does not mean that we're going to be doing less. We're doing more with less. As a business guy, I can understand that as a model. Not just the numbers don't tell me everything. It's what are we doing with it? And that's why the overall review of what I see on the table for this year's numbers and projects, this is a good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Any other questions or comments? Representative Keel? I'm sorry, Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. And I just wanted to echo a little bit of what Representative Hansen was saying in the sense that I haven't decided how I'm going to vote, but I am uncomfortable with moving the money around, as I've indicated before. I don't criticize you. I know the hand that you've been dealt, and as you said, it's the process at work, and you have to make it work how you can. I think it's unfortunate that we're put in this position, and I'm struggling. I'm struggling with it. So I just wanted you to know that and give you comment. I share some of the comments that Representative Hansen made, and that it's a disappointment with the way the process is working, and not with you, not with your efforts, because I know you've tried hard. And I have to say, I believe you've been fair in hearing bills and making sure that we all have a chance to participate in this, and I do appreciate that. So, but I'm uncomfortable with the process.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Any other questions? Representative Keel, Vice Chair Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too want to thank you for the success in the Ag Committee and feel really good about what we're doing here today. And with that, I also would like to ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. So there will be a roll call.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Only one vote for Representative Johnson.
Duly noted. Representative Kala Johnson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, I was just practicing saying aye aye.
All right. No more discussion. The clerk will take the roll.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Keel?
Yes.
Mark Anderson?
Yes.
Paul Anderson?
Aye.
Applebaum?
Yes.
Bly?
No.
Clark?
Yes.
Daniels?
Aye.
Eklund?
Yes.
Fabian?
Yes.
Grunhagen? Hansen?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Lewick?
Aye.
Metza?
Aye, aye.
Miller?
Yes.
Pearson?
Yes.
Poppy?
Aye.
Sundin?
Aye.
With there being 18 ayes and, excuse me, I'm sorry, with there being 16 ayes and 2 nays, the motion prevails. Thank you, members. Any closing comments? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to say thank you to the staff. We do have outstanding staff, partisan and nonpartisan staff, who keep us informed, sometimes entertained, Mr. Nisely, and and otherwise provide very good service to us, and I think that it's most appreciated in all of the committees, but certainly in this one. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, once a chair, always a chair is what Chair David says, and so thank you, Chair Poppy, as well. I too would like to thank all the staff, partisan and nonpartisan. We have some of the best right here, and I think every single person would agree with that. Nancy, you're fantastic. I always heckle you as well, but we do. We have great staff. Mr. Sullivan, Mr. Savory, thank you for all the work that you do for us as well. And Representative Poppy, I'm always giving this guy grief. I say he doesn't have a heart. You know, it's good cop, bad cop. But the truth of the matter is he's fantastic. And I would like also say, last year we had Mr. Alex Bratz. And I think every single one of us appreciated the work that Alex did. You know, and I think it's no secret. Alex was, one of my son's best friends. And so I love that kid dearly. And I was, I hated to see him go, right? But we have Nick, and Nick has done a fantastic job. So thankful for that. Nick is here also. And, the pages, I love your bow tie there, Joseph. Allison, thank you so much for what you've done as well. And it's been a true honor. And you know what? I have this picture on my wall in the office in which I occupy. And it's a picture of Jackie Robinson. It's called Breaking the Barrier. And Representative Clark, again, thank you for everything that you've done for this committee. And Representative Poppy for the committee that we had for a while. But I want to read to you on his quote, Jackie Robinson's quote. Again, the picture is titled Breaking the Barrier. He said, "I'm not concerned with you liking or disliking me. All I ask is that you respect me as a human being." And I know that we can get, pretty passionate at times and whatnot, but every single person here, you have my respect. And I hope that I have yours as well. So with that, members, we are adjourned.